time to talk some baseball as we're joined on the G&M Family Market phone line by our friend Evan Davis, the host of the In Play podcast. You read his work at Fan Rag, Hardball Times, and much more. Evan, a good Monday afternoon to you.
Always great to be back with you guys, Rich.
Absolutely. Well, let's go back to the Major League Baseball trading deadline and winners and losers. Who made out pretty well at the deadline?
Well, I think the obvious candidates would be the Dodgers and the Yankees. The Yankees had a corner infield situation that they had to plug in. They wanted to get a little bit more pitching, and they went out and did it. Red Sox fans, of whom your listeners are many, will be very disappointed with the Todd Frazier, Tommy Kamey, David Robertson deal. Not only did the Yankees make a super bullpen again the way that they had at the first half of last season, but they stole away the one guy that the Red Sox kind of needed, which was a third baseman, and which was Todd Frazier. I think Dave Dombrowski had one main goal in mind at the trade deadline, which was to get Frazier, and the Yankees just scooped him up out from under him. I think the Dodgers, you know, it's an interesting argument. Did they need another ace? Yes, Clayton Kershaw's out for a few weeks with a back problem, but, I mean, this team has the potential to potentially win 117 games, which no team has ever done in the history of Major League Baseball. Did they need to reload? There's an argument to be said that it's the team that probably needed to reload the most. Yes, the Yu Darvish isn't going to be able to help them win the NL West. They won the NL West months ago. But does he help improve their odds of winning a World Series? Oh, yeah. Once Kershaw is healthy, that's a pretty dominant 1-1A at the top of the Dodgers rotation, not to mention how well Alex Wood and Brandon McCarthy are pitching and how good Rich Hill has looked of late. So I think those are definitely the big winners. I think the Cubs made out pretty well as well. They've had some rotation issues, so to go get Jose Quintana away from the White Sox, I think, is a big move for them. But these are all teams that you would hope to make moves, and they did. When we talk about losers, I think the Houston Astros have to be disappointed. I know we talked when I was last on the show that they probably didn't need to make a really big move, but Keuchel is still not the full strength. Now Lance McCullers is hurt. The talk had been that A.J. Hinch was really pushing Jeff Luhnow to go get him a starter. You know, the Astros are well on the way to being AL pennant favorites. And they didn't go get a frontline guy. They weren't able to land Sonny Gray, who I should also mention the Yankees got. They didn't get a Yu Darvish. They didn't get a Jose Quintana. They got Francisco Liriano, who's going to the bullpen. He's not even going to help the rotation. The Astros, I think, have fewer margins for error than the Dodgers do, despite being pennant favorites. So I think you look at that team and you really wish that maybe they had made a bigger push to go get a big piece.
Now, far be it from me to defend Dave Dombrowski, but, you know, Todd Frazier's great, but he was hitting about, what, 207 when the Yankees got him. I think, now, Eduardo Nunez can't continue to hit like late 90s Barry Bonds here, but my goodness, he's been on fire, and the call-up of Rafael Devers has been terrific. And then they went and got Addison Reed to set up Craig Kimbrel. It wasn't the big splash, but I think they did okay.
They didn't do too badly. I kind of came down hard on Dombrowski right after the deadline just because I think that the way that he operates and has operated since he took over the Red Sox 2 years ago was to empty the farm for major league stars because the win curve is now. You can't really blame him for doing that. And good Lord, I mean, look at what he's brought back between Craig Kimbrel, Drew Pomeranz, and Chris Sale, not to mention the free agent signing of David Price. Like, you would never begrudge a GM for going to get those pieces. I think that the concern is that he didn't give himself a great deal of flexibility this time around, especially when there was such a glaring need at third base. This team was a black hole at the position. There had been chatter that Dombrowski wanted to stick with Pablo Sandoval and not call Devers up. The veracity of those reports could be open to conjecture, but, you know, he kind of backed himself into a corner and didn't have a lot of pieces in the minor leagues to go out and get a bigger third base name. You know, Frazier has a low batting average, but that's not why you're getting Frazier. You're right. Getting him because he offers power. He's been walking a ton this year. He's a big defensive boost from Sandoval. Now, Nunez is fine. I don't think you can complain about him as a depth piece. He's about a league average bat. He's kind of a defensive disaster, but nothing could be worse than the way Sandoval plays the position. And Devers, like, listen, Devers has had such a hot start, but he's a kid. You know, he's going to have rookie eligibility next year. We don't know how big league pitching is going to adjust to him and if he can adjust to the adjustments. And I think that, yeah, man, has Nunez looked on fire since he got traded? But the track record does not suggest that he's going to be able to keep it up. So while having both of those guys is obviously an improvement on Sandoval, you guys are in, you know, a shootout with the Yankees. And for the first time in a few years, you know, the Yankees have the best bullpen in baseball. They had one of the best rotations already before they got Sonny Gray. You know, in an arms race like that, can Dombrowski really say to himself that he did enough? Mm. We'll see. I mean, you guys are 3 games up in the division. Every projection system still says that you're going to win the AL East, but I just look at the way that the Yankees handled their business and not giving up a lot of their blue-chip prospects in order to fill their holes. I just wonder how things are going to look at the end of September at the top of that division.
We're talking with Evan Davis here on Downtown. 3 of these divisional races already pretty much wrapped up. 3 good ones going. What do you think will end up being the closest race of those that are still open?
The AL East probably will be the one that I think will go down to the wire. We're already seeing the Cubs pull away from the Brewers. Now, their division lead isn't that large, but the Brewers have had really struggled since the All-Star break, and the Cubs are starting to look like the Cubs again. David Stern has decided not to be a big-name buyer. There were rumors that he might have been in on Sonny Gray. He didn't end up going to get any big league impact players, whereas the Cubs did, and also all the Cubs hitters are starting to positively regress and play like they're supposed to. So I think that's probably locked up. The Nationals are sailing away with it. The Dodgers are sailing away with it. The Astros. Cleveland, I am not too worried about at all. I mean, yes, the Royals are doing it again and somehow overperforming every underlying stat that you can throw at them and every projection system that would have predicted how they'd turn out. And they are giving Cleveland a run in the Central, but I think Cleveland is just too deep. I mean, the rotation, the bullpen, the way their top line guys are hitting, it's a great defense. I just think they're too complete. So I think they'll be able to hold the Royals up down the stretch. So I think it's between the Yankees and the Red Sox, and then whoever gets that second wild card. Can the Rays stick around? Can the Mariners make a push? Will the Royals be able to hold on? I mean, I think that's been the storyline throughout the whole season. What this kind of bunching of mediocre to okay, decent teams shooting it out to see if they can get that play-in game against whoever comes in second in the AL East.
Now, the Yankees team carried in large part in the first half of the season by young Aaron Judge. He has gone into a slump after the All-Star break. Some would blame the home run derby. You look a little deeper in a piece you did for FanRag, and it's a number of things contributing to what appears to be his, his inability to hit at the phenomenal level that almost no one could continue throughout the course of a season.
Yeah, I think people forget that he had the best first half of a rookie in Major League history. You know, rookies don't hit 30 home runs and run a, you know, plus, you know, over a 200 weighted runs created plus from April to July. It just never happened. So there was just no way that was going to continue. And the home run derby curse, I mean, that has been debunked over and over and over again throughout the years. I mean, the home run derby participants are self-selecting. It's the guys who had hot first halves, specifically in the power department. Most of those players can't sustain that because it's a little bit of a fluke. And granted, Judge is the best power hitter probably in the game at the moment. He hits the ball harder than anybody. He has more line drive home runs than anybody this season. But again, it's just ridiculous, the kind of overperformance he was putting up. So I think that's mostly what's going on. I think pitchers are starting to figure out where they can maybe get him to chase a little bit more. He's gone a little cold, kind of in the lower third of the plate, in the outer half Pitchers are just attacking him in different places, and I think he just needs to figure out how to adjust. I think he will. He's one of those guys who, you know, despite his lumbering presence, is a more intelligent hitter than I think people give him credit for. And his reputation throughout the minor leagues, and this goes for Cody Bellinger as well, his NL counterpart. You know, they're big guys, and they have big swings, and guys figure out how to strike them out a lot, but then they adjust. So, you know, Judge is far and away going to be the AL Rookie of the Year, and I think that he still has a decent shot at MVP honors, even, you know, and a rookie who hits for, you know, 170 WRC plus at the end of the season, runs a 1,000 OPS, can't ever say that that was a bad season from the guy. It's just that his first half was historic.
Evan, before we let you go, away from baseball, you've you've written a wonderful piece here about the newest incarnation of Twin Peaks, Twin Peaks, The Return, now episode 13. You write about. Now, I love the original series. I have not watched any of this new one. So for someone who hasn't jumped into the new one yet, is it worth the effort?
I mean, effort is a good word to use here. If for any of you listeners who love Twin Peaks or you love David Lynch, I think this is every episode that has aired so far has been absolutely pure joy. I've loved every second of it. It's a tough watch if you want to immediately go back to kind of the fun and quirky, you know, jazz, coffee and cherry pie vibe of the original series. But, you know, if you love Mulholland Drive, if you love Lost Highway, if you love Inland Empire, if you love that kind of late period, crazy, horrifying Mobius strip narrative style of David Lynch's filmmaking, I think you'll be on board with it. I think it's a really dense and complex show. It's very emotionally powerful in a way that you might not believe if you're just jumping into it. It's you got to watch all 18 episodes. You know, Lynch has described it as a feature film in 18 parts, and I think that the way he's moving through all these different storylines and exploring all old characters and new characters, you know, we're really not going to understand what this thing really was until we've seen the whole thing. And even then, I think it's going to be years of thought and analysis and reaction before we realize what's going on. But suffice to say, no one's ever made a TV show quite like this. And I highly recommend anybody who's a fan of Twin Peaks or David Lynch to get a Showtime streaming subscription and catch up, because we've only got 5 more left. The finale's on September 3rd. And if you like it, you can find all of my columns on the show every Monday morning on Decider.com, which is the New York Post's culture and entertainment vertical. So it's a big recommend from me.
Excellent, excellent. Hey, Evan, it's great talking baseball and TV with you. Thanks for joining us, and we'll do it again very soon.
My pleasure, Rich. Thanks.